Rich Ghoulish here, doing a well-paid promotional advertisement. I'm sensing a show coming to you momentarily called... Oh, yes, it's coming to me. Begins with a... give me a letter. M, yes. Line. MacPod. Yes, MacPod. Yes, I knew that yesterday.
Hi everyone, this is Josh welcoming you to a special episode of the Muck Pod, where we'll be chatting with three new faces here at Muck Putty who've been hired to work on the production of Bad Jelly. So enjoy our conversations with Del, Polly, and Daisy. Okay, and we are here now with Del. Hi Del.
Hey, how are you?
Hey Del, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This is, it's really neat you guys have a studio, like, just right in the... Like a mini studio in the studio.
I know, right? Yeah, we're really lucky because we get some real cool people to talk to on tap.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we've managed to find the one, like, sort of room in the office that didn't have anything going on in it and isn't connected directly to anyone's office. So it seems to work. And yeah, it's a nice way to chat people and get to know them. Even people we've known for years, we get to learn new things about them. So
it's amazing that, like, I think is when we get into work, all we talk about is work.
Right.
So it's nice to have this resource where we can come in here and we talk a bit about work, of course, but we get to know the people as well. So,
And so you're one of the newer faces at the studio. Can you tell us what it is you do at Muck Putty?
I have been hired on a storyboard artist on, can we say the new project?
It's been announced.
Oh, okay. I just wasn't sure. But yeah, I'm working on Bad Jelly.
Fantastic. Yeah. And how's that going?
It's pretty exciting. I haven't done much storyboarding, but, like, I know I'm capable of it. So it's, like, I don't know if I have bad habits or not. Mm. But, you know, those will get wrung out and ironed out. And, but no, it's been really exciting just kind of being around other creatives. Because before this, I worked in insurance for, like, 5 months.
Wow, that's a U-turn, isn't it?
Yeah, not ideal, but natural disasters keep happening. So I kept having a job.
Yeah, you're never not gonna be out of work in insurance.
Right?
That's right.
And yeah, so I was like, well, I would much rather there won't always be a job in store or like in animation, but there will always be a job in insurance. even if my contract, you know, I don't get another one, like, I can always go back to
it's nice to have insurance to fall back on, right?
it'll be waiting.
Yeah.
So were you doing had you studied animation? Were you doing animation at all while you were working in insurance?
So, back in the day, I did study animation in university, but I dropped out because I didn't like the way the program was going, and then I also ran out of money. So it is what it is. And back in the States, I felt like I couldn't actually, animation was just such a far reach, because, you know, I'm from Indiana, and it's quite a ways to the West Coast.
Sure.
And so it felt so scary just thinking about moving to LA, trying to get a job, trying to meet people. And so I just kind of, I stuck around with comics. Mm-hmm. I have a book deal now with, FSG McMillan.
Awesome.
Yeah, doing something, been doing that for a couple years. And then I think I've got another one lined up. I'd have to ask my agent because I haven't heard anything about that in a minute.
Is this a book that you've written or illustrated?
I'm drawing both of them.
Cool.
They're both written by other writers. Mm-hmm. I'm working on my writing, and hopefully that's something I get to showcase sooner or later, because I feel like I've learned a lot. But
absolutely. Well, you've got your foot in the door, and I feel like you learn a lot about storytelling by taking someone else's story and drawing it.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's definitely like being able to interpret someone else's words into something like visual. Mm-hmm. And something that you, like, someone can understand really easily. Because, like, comics, I feel like it's really the gateway to, like, reading. Because it, like, half of the writing is in the drawing. So it just makes it so much easier. And as someone who has, I haven't been formally diagnosed with dyslexia. But, like, I have trouble reading just, like, pages upon pages.
Sure.
It was just easier to, I don't know, pick up a manga or a comic book and... That felt way better.
Fewer words.
I'm 100% with that.
Yeah.
I even had comics that were that I got in France, and they were French, so I couldn't read them. But I'm like, I don't care. I can understand them anyway. Like I have like Days of Future Past,
right?
That classic X-Men story. I never read it. I just look at the pictures, and I can follow it. I actually have an English version now as well, but but still, yeah. No, I feel that too. It's just screeds of like words. It's exhausting to read it. And whereas I can look at pages and pages and pages and pages of a comic and I never get tired. It's fantastic.
I think that's kind of what words do to you. It's why I read it when I'm going to sleep, because at a certain point your brain just your brain just rejects the amount of words you're trying to scan. You go, I guess I'm going to sleep now.
It's like it's so much work for your brain to like come up with the pictures yourself. Like if it's not something that you're used to doing. Like I feel like that's part of why people have such a hard time reading, and just like also media literacy is kind of fallen where people don't really understand or they can't really interpret what they're reading.
For sure. We could talk all day about like people, saying, because this happens in the story, that means that the person who wrote it is all in favor of that. You know, if someone shoots someone in a book, well, obviously that person condones going around shooting people.
Probably not.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like we look at a character and it's like, wow, they're kind of awful. And I'm like, well, yeah, they're going to get better.
There's an arc going on, that's the point of a story. Yeah.
Or like it would be boring if they were perfect.
Well, otherwise we're bringing back, you know, the Hays Code, which was the film code from the 30s, where it's like films have to be about a good person who overcomes evil. And that's a fine story to tell if that's what the artist wants to tell. You know, people should be able to tell stories about bad people, bad things that happen as well. You've got to explore those things.
So how do you get into comics though? Because this is like, I got into animation, but have kind of like envied people who got into comics because that I love comics, you know? So how does that happen?
Well, I might not actually endorse getting into comics because it doesn't pay very well. But like, honestly, I feel like I just started doing comics because it allowed me to travel. Like, it gave me an excuse to travel and meet people.
And I love that.
It's also, I feel, a little labor-intensive in a different way. And also, anyone with, you know, paper and a pen even can make a comic. Whereas you need software or a lot of supplies to do animation.
Yeah, I couldn't make animation by myself. Like, I only really want to do, like, designs and storyboards. I have no desire to actually animate, you know, or to, like, compositing. I don't even know what that is. Like, you know, like, and then you need actors and this and that. And I'm like, there's no way I could do this all by myself. So I kind of just stuck to comics in a way to like tell my own little stories. And, you know, you can print it out and have a thing. You can't print out and animate, like, you know, a DVD, but you can't print it out and hand it to someone really. And so I thought, like, you know, it gave me a chance to, I've made so many friends, like, just through comics. Like, I found it to be my way of connecting with people. Like,
so does that happen at conventions or comic book stores or what?
A lot of conventions. Like I would do a lot of library shows actually. Like libraries would just like put on a little convention. They'd maybe call it a festival because conventions tend to have a different connotation of more capitalism involved. And I, you know, I like conventions well enough, but I really love like library shows because it really is just about the creator and the book and the connections that you can, that come with those two things coming together. And, so yeah, I've met people, met people on Twitter and I stayed in a hotel room with them before even meeting them in person at these shows. And, like half the reason that I even landed in New Zealand was because I knew Chelsea. And yeah, and I worked on, her book. I flatted most of it. And,
Is this Project Naught? Fantastic.
And so, like, you know, it just one thing leads to another with a lot of these things. Like the first writer that I'm collaborating with on the book that I'm working on, it's called Fast Break. It's a basketball book. I couldn't tell you what it's about. I'm terrible at telling people what it's about, but, I met him at a convention in my hometown when I was like 17 or 18, when I had just put out like my first little book and he was, you know, doing his thing. And then 10 years later, we have a book deal together.
Excellent. I guess that's the thing. Like conventions are a little bit more about people are there trying to sell stuff and trying to make money, which, hey, you got to make money. Whereas the nice thing about libraries is they aren't selling things. You can just borrow things for free. It is a community space, yeah. And the community is what you really get out of those out of those things, connecting with other artists.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you do, you know, you can sell your own work there, and the library really doesn't care how much money you make. Mm-hmm. And the tables are usually free. They often provide like lunch. Like, it's really welcoming and really nice. And the librarians are just so happy to have people there, because then they'll go around and buy everybody's book and then put it in the collection.
Fantastic.
But yeah, like, I feel no pressure to make a sale. Like, right. Even if I lose money at a library show, it's fine. Like, I'll pay for the hotel, I'll pay for the Airbnb, my food, I was going to eat that anyway.
Right, yeah, like, yeah. So you're kind of treated like you're getting an experience.
Yeah.
You're going to enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's no pressure just, like, you know, makes that so much easier to enjoy.
I was
going to
say, because I've talked about this on the pod, that I feel nervous about hanging around a stall or looking through someone's work at a convention, right. Because I know that they are there they'd like to earn money, and I don't like giving them false hope. Whereas
right.
A convention like this, where sure, you can sell stuff and make money, but it is more about connecting with other artists. You're just going to be socializing more because there's not that obligation of we're all here to make money.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And like they'll often ask a lot of the artists to, like, do you want to do a panel or do you want to do an activity? Like, I would often do like what's called a quick draw, which they give you a big like post-it pad and you just like take suggestions from the audience on what to draw, like, really so quickly. Cool. And we would go all over town with that, or all over the downtown area. Like, we'd go down to the Vault at Midnight, which is the comic book shop that, honestly, bar none, so good. Like, mm-hmm. Love that store. I would go in there and spend $100 like every time.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then, or like down to the art gallery or just in the library itself, like trying to draw a crowd. Like, the excitement was so much, like, it was so nice. And they would get like big names in there too, like Kazu Kibuishi or Reina Talgemeier was coming like every year. It's just so special. And, you know, it kind of kills me that, you know, I live now in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and I don't get to go to those things.
Right, yeah,
like,
it's really
killing me. But, like, my life back home wasn't really doing me any favors. Mm. So being here, overall, I feel like New Zealand's treated me really well.
Great.
And if I don't get to go to a convention, like, oh well.
Well, you know? yeah. I mean, just for a while, if you don't go, you can always go back for a convention. You know.
I was gonna say you're a working artist. If you save up, I know there's plenty of artists here who deliberately save their money so that they can go to conventions around the world. It's funny that earlier you mentioned how daunting just moving across the country is to LA, and now you've ended up all the way on the other side of the planet, really.
Yeah, weirdly enough, it was less scary because I know that New Zealand has more social safety nets. Like, if I get hurt or if I get
ACC,
sick,
sure,
yeah. Like, even just healthcare that I wouldn't like lose my leg over. You know, like,
sure.
I actually came here the day I was set to leave. I got a kidney stone.
Ooh, and, right.
It cost me $165 to go to the clinic, and then another $50 for prescriptions just so that it was like tolerable.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take my chances and go to New Zealand in case it goes south.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
just
breathe
through it until you get to New Zealand.
I just hope it doesn't resolve before I get to New Zealand.
But yeah, it was, so I was like, oh, you know, like that'll be fine. And my visa is only for a year. So it's like, if it doesn't work out for me here, I can go home. Like, America's going to be there. Maybe
exactly.
I'll burn down.
I don't know. Like, I don't think anybody ever regretted a life experience like travel.
Sure.
Yeah. You know? But like, honestly, I've been having like the time of my life here.
So how long have you been here? When did you get here?
Since last November. So 10 months almost.
Right, and so you met Chelsea here then, is that?
No, I actually met her on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I met her on Twitter, and then we got to talking, and, you know, we just chatted, and some stuff happened in the U.S. where it made me a little more scared to keep living there.
Okay.
And I'm like, I need to leave, so I'm like, well, I have friends in New Zealand, like, why not give that a shot? And, you know, Aussie was next because, like, you know,
right,
they're pretty good about some stuff too.
Sure
they got spiders, but like, I don't know, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
but Yeah, no, and then things worked out here. I met my partner, like, the first day I got here, basically. Oh, right.
Wow. How many sort of contacts did you have in New Zealand? Was it just Chelsea?
It was just Chelsea, people? And then a friend of mine, Richard, we met, actually, he was in Michigan for a library show, like, 10 years ago.
Right.
And we stayed in contact through, like, Facebook and Twitter, and I'm like, hey, you still living in Melbourne? And then he's like, actually, no, I live in Auckland now. And I'm like, you don't say. Awesome. Yeah. So it, you know, it was just nice to kind of have someone to, like Chelsea picked me up at the airport and made sure I got to my Airbnb okay. And like, just to have someone who could pick me up if I fell down.
Yeah,
even
that.
Know,
yeah,
I did. A lot, yeah, doesn't it? Yeah. It really helped. Kind of take a lot of the pressure off.
Yeah.
And
because it's hard when you move to a new country. Like, no doubt. Nobody knows you. Yeah. Like, no one knows what you've already achieved and what you've done. And, you know, so it's just lovely to have, like, you know, a connection.
Well, you took a gamble, and I'm really glad to hear that it's working out. Yeah. What were you doing for work since you got here and before you started at Muck Putty?
So it was mostly just the insurance thing. That was for a long time. Gotcha. Before that, I was flipping burgers.
Yep, been there.
And I actually came over, and I had a job telemarketing for Greenpeace.
Oh, yeah.
But it was kind of awful, so I quit. And
I give to Greenpeace, but I have their number listed as do not answer, because they always want more, and I'm given what I can. So I just, sorry, guys.
Yeah, no, it was, I don't think they trained people right, honestly. Right. Yeah. But yeah, and, you know, I came over here pretty confident. Like, at least I had something. Mm-hmm. But then when my partner saw that I was, like, really struggling with it, she was like, yeah, you should maybe quit, and we'll find something else for you. Don't worry. And so
I think
it worked out.
It's the better thing to do rather than, you know, for security's sake, holding on to something that's not treating you right or not making you feel good. Take a chance and try and find something you like better.
Yeah.
And so did you respond to a call out from Muck Putty for storyboard artists, or did someone let you know that there was a position?
So Chelsea had let me know. And then when I didn't hear back from that, I responded to the call out. Mm-hmm. And because I'm like, well, better shoot my shot, I guess.
Yes.
And and then I got asked to do a quick test. They highlighted, I think it was Ryan. He highlighted a piece of script from the Barefoot Bandits pilot. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Hey, was it anything to do with, was it Mayor Gobb, like, applauding himself at all, Rhys Darby?
Oh, no, okay.
I was just wondering if they were still using the same one that I got hired from, because I also did Barefoot Bandits.
Oh, yeah? No, it was the detective guy. He, like, touched a UFO and got zapped, and it was pretty cute. And I'm like, did that in a couple days, and then I got the email on Thursday. I spent, like, Friday and a little bit of Saturday working on it, and then I sent it in on that Saturday because I'm like, I just want to get this over with. Like,
so this is an animation test?
No, it was a storyboard test.
Oh, storyboard test. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, and then so I like downloaded Toon Boom. I did the trial for like 20 days or whatever, and then I got that done really quickly, and they were like apparently really impressed.
That's fantastic, and it sounds like storyboarding really suits your interests and your skill set more so than animation, which you aren't necessarily as keen on.
Yeah, animation is just a little too technical for me.
Yep, sure.
Like, there's always some new program to learn, and I could never get the hang of it. Like, I was decent at, like, modeling, like 3D modeling, but I hated doing it.
We're going through that a little bit at the moment. A few growing pains, because I know how to animate, but because we're moving to Toon Boom, we all have to spend time learning how to use a new software.
Right.
You know, I can draw, but I need to figure out how to draw with this program. So you're totally right.
Yeah, no, I've been kind of peeking at what some people are working on and trying to learn, and I'm just like, kind of could never.
But you are using Toon Boom for storyboarding?
Yeah, Toon Boom Storyboard Pro.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's not Harmony. It's just
it's an extra thing just for storyboards. Yeah. I've used it. It's pretty good. Like, I enjoyed it.
I find it very intuitive.
Yeah.
There's a lot, like, hidden beneath the surface, like, as far as tools and capabilities.
It's sort of what they do. They provide you every option and asset and thing that every feature that an artist could want, but they can't have every single thing being a button, so there's things hidden behind windows, and you find your way through.
Yeah, I actually like it that way, but I find it really intuitive and easy to use, because, like, I've used it maybe, like, once 2 years ago when I did a little practice when I like fudged a student discount.
Right.
And very nice. And then I used it again for the test and I'm like, it's easy enough. Like, sure, it can be a little finicky with like the camera moves, but it's really not that bad. And
I remember the drawing tools being really good.
Oh, like, I actually really like them. They're really smooth.
Yeah. Like, and it feels kind of like just paper drawing almost.
I think that's the thing I'm going to enjoy the most is Flash has never been good just drawing really, lines.
Yeah, it's taking the joy out of drawing for me.
Yeah.
Like, I avoid drawing in Flash as much as I possibly can. And then you know, in the evening I turn to Procreate, which is just a dream to draw in, you know? It's just so lovely. Why can't Flash be like that?
I mean, well, they aren't, so we're jumping ship.
Yeah, that's what happens, yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't think Adobe makes very user-friendly software.
Yeah.
They're kind of crazy like that.
Del, I wanted to ask, is there anything that you're enjoying this week? Anything that's inspiring you? That could be an artist, some music, a podcast, TV show, anything.
Gosh. I haven't listened to much music recently. I've just been like listening to a lot of just YouTube videos talking about random things for 20 minutes. But,
is that what you listen to while you work?
Typically, but I found that like when I really need to focus, putting both my earbuds in really helps. And then I'll just put on like a musical.
Nice. What musicals are you listening to?
So, like, I don't know why it helps me focus, but like, In the Heights, musical soundtrack from the movie from like 2 years ago.
Sure, I saw it.
That one gets me every time.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much fun.
And it's quite bombastic, so it's a little bit like a wall of sound for the outside world.
Yeah, and I'm like, I wish I had more of this, but like more of this kind of sound, but like, not this because I'm getting kind of bored of it, you know?
I've been the exact same way where I'm so familiar with a soundtrack from a musical that it's good for just listening to because it gets my energy up, but I also don't have to pay attention to it because I'm familiar with it. But when you listen to it enough times, you're like, I want more of this, but different. Not this.
Yeah. Well, then I switched to Hairspray.
Nice.
From the motion picture. Love that one. And then I was going to do Little Shop of Horrors.
My favorite.
Fantastic.
So good. Like,
I just watched the movie again because it turns out one of my flatmates had not seen it, and that will not stand.
No, you can't have that.
Yeah.
You can't live like that.
Their life begins today.
Right, yeah.
And yeah, I was listening to an interview with Frank Oz, and I'm like, how has he directed one of the greatest movie musicals of all time? And he's also Miss Piggy.
Yes.
Yeah.
How did he do that?
He's just an artist. He started off doing puppetry and did it for many years and was part of the Muppet Troupe. He was Yoda in Star Wars and then decided, actually, I've had enough. I want to try my hand at directing. And he's been a director for decades and he's done a whole bunch of classic comedies.
Real different stuff as well.
Big variety.
Like he didn't just stick to puppets.
And now he's doing stuff on Broadway. I don't actually know what it is, the show that he's doing, but he said we really tried to break the format and do something really interesting. So I'm glad he's still with us and still making super interesting stuff. Frank Oz, he's amazing.
Yeah, he's a hero. Definitely.
For sure.
Yeah,
he's like, I definitely want to delve more into his career. I think there's maybe he's written a book or something. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, dang. And then when I see him on screen, I'm like, who is that? What? And then I look at him, I'm like, oh my God, that's Frank Oz in Knives Out. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, he's also sometimes an actor.
Yeah.
Like, he shows up at the start of Blues Brothers. He was in Knives Out. You can always spot him because he's got a mustache, he's bald, and he sounds a little bit like Bert. Like, Bert's just less cartoony.
Yeah.
Always a treat. Well, that's fantastic. Del, thanks so much for chatting with us. Is there anything you want to promote or any place people can follow you before we chat with you again?
I don't really have anything to promote at the moment. I guess look out for my book coming out. I think it's probably going to be 2025 at this point.
What did you say the name was again?
It's called Fast Break.
Fast Break.
Yeah.
Okay.
By me and Sean Pryor. Lovely guy. And then...
and you will definitely come back on and talk to us about that once.
You know, we'll probably end up doing like a book club we did for Project Naught, where we just look through the whole thing and ask you about all the choices that you made because it's fun.
Boy. Yeah, we take it apart and spoil it and have a great time doing it.
Yeah, well, but that's really all I got going on right now because I just started this new job. Crazy.
Yeah, is that enough?
Doing an animation job and having a book coming out, that's plenty.
I'm like, how do people do more?
I know.
It's crazy. But yeah, thank you guys so much for having me.
No worries.
Thanks for coming in, Del.
now we're here with Polly Fryer. Hi, Polly.
Hi, thanks very much for having me today.
No problem.
Welcome to the MuckPod.
You're another new face here at MuckPuddy.
I am.
How long have you been here now?
Well, I've been involved with the Bad Jelly Project, which is the one that I'm working on for probably about over 2 years now, but in quite different capacities.
Sure.
Okay, so you must have jumped on quite early then.
In the earliest stages of development, almost.
Well, what you may not know is actually I was working at the Film Commission as the head of the Premium Fund.
Okay.
When I first came across Bad Jelly, because it actually applied to my fund for both development and production funding. And I had no prior association with MuckPuddy or anything like that, but I was super excited to see an animation project coming into that fund, which was really designed for bigger scale, shows with international potential and sort of high quality, sort of step change type shows. Mm-hmm. And I was really excited to see Bad Jelly because I thought it had a lot of those components, which were really exciting for the New Zealand industry and kind of the reason that the fund was set up in the first place.
Absolutely.
Right.
To help projects that the applicants feel could have a big life, could go, could
That's
really...
That's bold and ambitious were the words we were... that we were sort of... some of our buzzwords we were talking about, that they had ambition and that they were bold. And Bad Jelly had both of those things, which made it particularly exciting. And also we hadn't seen many animation projects coming through, and it was an industry that we knew that was kind of growing in New Zealand and we were looking to try and support. And luckily the Mucks and the team and all of you here managed to present a really good application that got you both development and a key piece of funding, which has helped sort of piece the whole thing together.
Mm. Absolutely. The production art for the pitch, just to sort of give people an idea, has been spectacular.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when we gave some money for development and the Mucks came back with the teaser, that was another really exciting thing, because we all knew that, you know, to be able to sell this overseas, you were going to need some really strong visual, you know, proof of concept, really. Mm-hmm. And the teaser that, I don't know if you were both involved in it, that you all created was great.
I've seen it.
I have seen it, I concur. It is beautiful. It's, I think, one of the first pieces done with Toon Boom at the studio. And I can't say for certain who was involved with it, but it just came out looking.
Diego was on it.
I think you're right.
I'm going to guess William was in there as well, but I might be wrong.
Wouldn't
about
surprise
that,
me. But it was, like you say, a great way.
The background department, of course. Did some
always knock it out of
work,
the park. Yeah. It is a really useful thing to be able to see. Well, here's what it could look like finished.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And look how successful it was. Like it, we're able to take it overseas and sell it, piece together the finance, and now we're sort of well into the swings of the production itself. All 13 episodes.
So there's a point where you're seeing this as an application, but then somewhere along the line you go, I want to be involved in this.
Yeah, so I finished with the Film Commission. I've never been a government bureaucrat before. I was just hired to manage this $50 million. It was a very unique fund, and I had some skill sets that were specific and fitted to it. And I co-managed the fund. It was a co-governance role with a Maori lady called Kay Elmers, who had quite a bit of governance experience, which I didn't have. And together we made the team to manage the premium fund.
Right.
And once the $50 million was handed out, sounds very easy in a sentence, actually it was a very hard job over 18 months. I finished at the Film Commission and I just went back to doing what I do, which is producing as a freelancer. And then it was probably 6 months or so after that a executive producer called Carthew Neal phoned me, who I do a lot of work with, and he had sort of partnered with the Mucks to help them put together the financial package for this show, and said, would I do some work looking at the financial documents and the budget and things like that, and sort of try and, you know, work with him to try and piece it together. So I agreed to do that. Mm-hmm. And then...
So is that when you see the credit executive producer, is that what that is?
Yeah, so executive producer can have several roles.
Yeah.
But often they are linked to attracting finance.
Right, because like some people, sometimes you see like a big star and they're the executive producer, and that means they're just making money off the back end, right?
Well, whereas, sort of, or they may, often with actors turned producers these days, they have originated the idea,
okay,
but their name attached to it brings money.
Okay, right, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
but every time you see the word as executive producer, that's not what it means. And in your case, that's not what this means, right?
So it does, yeah, it just generally means that they've been manage some aspect of the finance. I don't, sure. I'm not executive producer.
Oh, I was just, that was going to be, I'm saying we're talking about executive producers, but I,
yeah,
that's
no,
probably
so Carthew
not
is the executive producer, right, and Roger, right, Shakes is as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they've been part of that selling and piecing it together.
Right.
And my role is the supervising producer. So basically, you have Simon, who's your animation producer, who has super good animation experience.
Simon Ward.
Yes, yep. Simon Ward, who has no animation experience, but lots of finance, budgets, co-production, tax credit,
mm-hmm,
and sort of production workflow experience from film and TV. And together, we're working together to share our skills and learn from each other to bring those two aspects together, which this, my expertise is new to Mutpuri and animation is new to me. So it's,
yeah,
kind of a mutually,
sure,
beneficial arrangement.
Yeah, because you worked, you're from England, right?
Yes, London, yeah. Yeah.
From London. And was RSA? Was the...
I did do some work with Ridley Scott, yeah,
yeah,
in the early, wow, days. I was in commercials for quite a long time, so I worked,
right,
on,
commercials. It's a good,
yeah,
place,
quite
to
a lot of high-end commercials in the kind of, it was in the 90s, like booming times, booming budgets, like,
yeah,
mm-hmm,
a few million pounds to make a Levi's commercial in those days. And I did, right, a lot of music videos too. So like George Michael and like the Spice Girls,
oh,
and Robbie,
right,
Williams.
Oh, so you met loads of famous people.
Yeah, well, I was in the, had the lower end of things then. But they were great because those short form content is like a microcosm of bigger content.
Absolutely,
right? So you,
yeah,
can do lots of it and learn lots of things over a short,
fantastic,
period,
yeah,
of time. So it was quite fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Lots of projects being turned over quickly. You learn to think on your feet. You learn, here's how you do it in a short amount of time.
Yeah. And then, so what made you, when did you move to New Zealand?
I think I moved here in about 2006.
Okay.
Yeah, I had visited New Zealand on, like, I'd visited New Zealand, like, as a holiday. I'd lived in Australia for a while, so I'd visited New Zealand on holiday,
okay,
a few years, I don't know, in 1999 or something, and I really liked it.
Right.
And in 2006, I sort of had a bit of itchy feet in London, and I could get a working holiday visa, so I could basically just come and work for 18 months, and I thought, yeah, was,
give it a go,
keen to do that and give it a go, and so I came, and then I met my now husband.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's Kiwi.
He is Kiwi, yep.
Yeah.
He's from Wellington, yeah,
yeah. There's the trouble. It's these Kiwis are so irresistible.
The opposite happened to my cousin, who I am going to visit while I'm in England. He went over to London, met his wife, and now he lives there.
Now he lives there, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good way to, you know, settle down.
It happens,
so I hear.
Look, it happens.
I
That's
have,
all
or,
I could say.
Or so I have,
yeah,
read.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, what is life for you like at the moment outside of your role in Bad Jelly? Are you doing any other producing jobs on the side, or is this such a big project that it's your full-time job and that's that?
No, I am part-time on this because you have Simon, who is full-time.
Okay.
And so I'm sort of up to three days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of am only doing what I need to do, because I don't want to do Simon's job for him, because that's what he's here. I'm here to support him in his role,
mm-hmm,
not do his role. So that kind of works out quite well. I have too many other things I'm doing. I have a feature film with Picky Films, which is Taika Waititi and Carthew Neal's company.
Wow.
We're just finishing at the moment. We're in the sound, doing the sound mix tomorrow, actually.
Oh,
so
fun.
So
yeah. Nearly there then.
Yeah, really nearly there. Yeah. So that's just at the finishing end and delivery end of that. I have just finished a series that I was also supervising producing called Creamery.
Oh, I know Creamery. I watched, yeah, the first season. I'm very excited for the next one.
Yeah.
Actually, that's Roseanne Liang.
That's it. Yeah,
She directed Shadow in the Cloud, which, yeah, we did some animation for that I was involved with.
Oh, really? Yeah, she's a great talent, I
Roseanne's
think.
Roseanne's fantastic, so talented.
Yeah, super talented. So I just was helping them out, also sort of more on the finance and producing management side, because Bronwyn, the producer who makes that show, had a baby. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm quite keen collaborator, so I'm often doing projects where I collaborate. So that's those two. And then I've got three feature documentaries in development
right.
as well, which I'm really excited about. They're more sort of passion projects and mm-hmm. things like that. And then there's a big feature film with a director called Andrew Niccol, who made Gattaca and The Truman Show.
Wow.
That is sort of threatening to happen. It's still at sort of final financing and early legal closing. I'm a little bit in denial about that one because it's very big and I'm not sure how I'm going to finish it.
A lot of irons in the fire.
Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, I know. You do have to be careful what you ask for, especially as the shoot seems to be looking like it's going to happen over summer, which is not that much fun when you've got a young family who are off school for 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's all extra.
It's funny, this is Muck Putty's first time going through this process where a project takes a really long time for the finance to come together, because all our other projects have been TV and Zed, where comparatively, they give it the thumbs up, we move into production, whereas this has been a new experience for us. But in your role, it must seem a little, you know, just by the books. You've worked on enough projects that you know this is just how long it takes for a big project like this to come together.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think they say that the average feature film, so not quite the same, but comparable, is 10 years to get into production. Right. Like, if you were to write a script this week, Simon, you probably could be looking it up to a sort of 10-year journey.
Right.
If you ever get it to screen. So I think that, I think you have to have a lot of patience and determination and resilience mm-hmm. in those situations. And I think the Mucks did well there, and they did really well partnering with Roger Shapes, obviously, who secured the rights from Spike Milligan, and then Carthew is a really good choice of financing EP. So they've made smart decisions along the way that have sort of helped them to get to this place. Mm. And now, for all of you Muck Putty people, this is the exciting bit, isn't it?
We're getting dangerously close to putting our hands, you know, into the project.
Well, some people already are. Like, we've got three storyboarding teams already at work, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Yep. Animatics are starting.
That's right.
In 3 or 4 weeks.
We got our hands on a script and did a read through of the script. One of the first scripts completed just yesterday. So it's happening.
Rigging on the characters has begun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's episode three. Yep. So, there's a few more going through the process. And then, the design team have been on it for quite a long time now, and rigging has started with the rigging department.
Does it feel different because the process of animation is so different to live action or documentary? Has it been a bit of a shift stepping into the animation world?
Yeah, it has been a real shift. Like, it's really, I'm always fascinated by different creative crafts and how things come together and how people can express things visually on screen. So it's been super amazing to see all the different parts that went into it. Like, I didn't know what rigging was or layouts were I don't think I really truly understood what animatics were and things like that. So seeing how that works is
in many
amazing.
Ways it's kind of opposite to the way live action works, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It feels like you're in the edit.
You edit at the end in live action, whereas in animation you edit at the beginning, and it's just, it's so different.
Yeah, it does feel like that.
How have you found working in the studio? Is it similar to other environments?
No, it's really, really different. Make, like, say, a feature film, it's a super intense period because it's super, super expensive. So, like, you have, like, 6 weeks pre-production. Well, you have a lot of stuff that goes on before. But when you're ready, you've got 6 weeks pre-production. It's super intense. You rent an office space. Everyone works, like, 24 hours a day. And then you have your 6 weeks to shoot it, which is even more intense, and you're out on location and you're fighting a lot of problems and things like that. And then you're exhausted. And then the edit starts, which takes a lot longer. And so the energy is really different here. Yeah. Like, people are generally a bit more chilled. Like, it's a long, slower burn. It's a marathon, not a sprint. So it's about, you know, people are working sort of diligently, but at a reasonably, a much slower pace and a lot less stressed.
Yeah.
I imagine when the actual animation starts, maybe.
I think that's the part where it does get stressful. Yeah. Because once the animation has started, it's kind of hard at that point then to make any major changes, because it's such a huge part of the process and such a slow part of the process that you really need to know before you actually start animating exactly what that scene is going to be like. So
yeah,
I can imagine that what feels like a slow ramp up will definitely ramp up by the time
it's like a slide or something, right? Yeah, like it's a long, slow it's climb like a backwards up, but then slide, a quick,
right? Yeah,
relative comparatively, let's say.
And also that, like, when I look at it from my sort of analysis point of view, like that's the expensive part. That's like the shoot, right?
I think so. Because
it's a intense period of time. We have a lot of people on the payroll.
That's right.
We've got a certain period of time in which to do certain episodes, and we won't have a lot of. Fat. There won't be a lot of contingency. Like, it's not like some other shows that you've made where you might be able to sort of extend the schedule a little bit. There's a lot of factors that mean the schedule is
carefully planned.
Yeah, carefully planned, but a little more rigid and has a little bit more consequence on it.
Nothing ends up on the cutting room floor, right? It should never get that far.
And you're right. It is like animation is like where the footage, if you like, is actually being created.
Like it's the assets, right?
It's the closest you could think to like filming on location, like you say, filming with an actor. You're like, this is the show. This is it happening.
Exactly. And the 4 seconds, I believe, that the animators are going to create every day needs to be treated like footage. Like, it needs to be securely stored, backed up, and all those kind of things in the same way that we would treat our, what we call rushes every day, which is the camera footage that we've shot.
Yeah, even on an individual level as an animator, at the end of every day, you want to save and back up your file, because there is nothing worse than getting back to your computer like next morning and something's happened to the file and it's corrupt or whatever, and you have to do the same animation again.
That's painful. Doing the same animation is so involved and intensive, you know, time intensive, that having to do the same thing again, nothing worse. Truly nothing worse.
I will say, though, it usually turns out better the second time and faster, because you know exactly what you're doing.
This is
true. But still, I don't recommend it.
Polly, I wanted to ask, is there anything that you have been watching or enjoying, any artists that have been inspiring you recently? Because we all need to, you know, leave work behind and take something in just to enjoy it.
Yeah, I actually have been surprisingly enjoying a series I've been watching with my husband on Neon called The Great.
Okay.
Oh, I know The Great.
Yeah, I know. Like, and it was, like, I've sort of traditionally been quite a, you know, typical British period drama sort of fan. And I did really enjoy The Favourite with Olivia Colman, which also has that same, the sarcasm and the irony and the sort of period drama with that twist. And I wasn't sure after the first episode, but the more I've watched it, the more I've really enjoyed it. Like, particularly after a stressful day, like, it's beautiful to watch. It's beautifully written, isn't it? Like, there's such good timing in it. The characters
It's very funny.
Yeah, really funny. Yeah. Like, it's a great, like, sort of, for me, that's been a great find of late. That because sometimes, you know, you can go for a while and you don't really find a show that, you know, really hooks you in. You sort of watch a few things. But this has really hooked us in of late, so we've been really...
Fantastic. Glasses of wine and huzzah.
Huzzah! Smash!
Yeah. That's Nicholas Holt is playing a Russian noble.
Nicholas the Great, is he?
Yeah, Peter the Great. Or Peter the Great's son. So he's Peter the Not So Great.
Okay, all right, right. And it's a very popular genre, rich and powerful behaving badly.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly, as you say, so that's been good. The other thing I've been enjoying a lot of lately is the Women's World Cup.
Oh, yes. Right. I've been hearing a lot of good things.
I like a little bit of sport, and I'm particularly passionate about women's sport and equity within women's sport, so I've been enjoying that.
So is England still in?
They are in. So they are playing tonight against Australia in a semi-final.
Oh, wow.
And the winner of whom will play Spain, who won last night's semi-final, and they will play on Sunday as the finals.
Right, because England, like, they just won the European champions, is that
They did,
correct?
Yeah, so they would be contenders, but only their star player stomped on a Nigerian last game, so she can't play this game.
It's not Jill. Red-carded. Please don't tell me it was Jill.
Now, what is it? Is it Laura James or Lorna James?
All right,
or
it's not the one James? I'm thinking of, then that's okay.
Yeah, she's a phenomenal player, and I can't speak to whether it was intentional or not, but it was a bad foul, and so she's out.
Oh, no.
By the time you hear this, people will know how that game shook out.
Yeah.
It has been really exciting, actually, just to hear people, just to hear some excitement for women's sports, because it is discouraging. It sometimes gets treated as the lesser, you know, which isn't fair at all. I've been loving the passion for the World Cup this year, the Women's World
there
Cup.
There were 43,000 people at Eden Park last night watching Spain
Wow.
versus Sweden.
For, for our country, that's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot of people, and also no New Zealand playing. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
I don't think
I would be surprised to think of any other sporting event that without New Zealand or a New Zealand team playing where that sort of crowd has got. So I think it's kind of has gripped the nation.
It really has. Mm-hmm. You can go down to the cloud and watch the game.
Yeah, there's a fan zone there. And there's a little pitch there. I can't remember what it's called. The Unity pitch.
That's
where
right.
You can go. Both my daughters play football and they've both been down there playing in the evenings.
Like,
it's like a little entertainment thing. Yeah. So you can book it as a club or as a team to go down and have a little game, which has been fun too.
It was funny, actually. I went past there just after coming out of Barbie and down there, and the pitch is pink.
Huh.
Right, which is it just fit perfectly after coming out of the pinkness of Barbie and seeing there was a game on actually when I was down there. It's really cool.
Fantastic. Well, Polly, this has been a great snapshot. Thanks so much for coming in and chatting with us and giving us a better idea about what exactly a producer in your position does, because it's been a learning experience for me.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much. It's been a very enjoyable way to spend a bit of time with you both.
Fantastic. And now we're here with Daisy. Hi, Daisy.
Hi, team.
Welcome to the pod and welcome to the studio.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
Good to have you.
How long have you been at the studio now?
Actually, it's been about 7 weeks,
right?
I think. So mm-hmm. 63 weeks to go.
What exactly is the title of your role?
I'm the production coordinator.
Okay, and production coordinator for Bad Jelly?
Oh, we're allowed to say the BJ word?
We are.
Production coordinator for Bad Jelly.
Excellent.
The animated series.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have to admit, everyone seems to have gotten their giggles out about the acronym BJ.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
It'll say BJ budget, BJ crew.
We've had to take it out of all of the naming conventions because it's just such an easy one to do.
Yeah.
It's just you know what? No.
It'll save us time wasted if we just type Bad Jelly.
Yeah, I guess also I'm sure the Mucks have some series called BJ.
No doubt.
Obviously, they're developing right now.
I'm sure they'd love to. They're always saying they want to get into the adult animation market.
They've been good at everything they put their hand to, though, so, you know.
That's true. Mm.
You never know. They'll surprise us, I'm sure.
Yeah, they will.
So, what would you describe your role as?
Production coordinator. I've actually come from a live action background, not by choice. It's sort of what I had access to.
Right.
I've been an armchair expert in animation because that's where my heart is.
Okay. Right. And you've known the Mucks for years.
For about 15 or so years. When I was like, you know what, after watching these special features on the Halo 2, DVD, special edition DVD, I would like to do voice acting.
Mm-hmm.
And they had just done like a little kind of gaggy Star Wars-y moment. And I was like, you guys need Lady Jawas, I'm ready.
You know, that's funny because these guys, particularly Ryan, they're kind of one-stop shop, studio. Like Ryan can just do just about every male voice. But the one thing they can't do, unless they're doing a Monty Python, drag voice, don't have women.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess that was also my point. And then they so kindly gave me 7 out of 13 characters of the Zelfs to voice. So when they had that toy line that was troll dolls but updated, even though the troll dolls came out not long after and kind of
rebranded.
And sort of steamrolled any other kind of thing. Anyway, I did a majority of those voices and I was so fucking proud. I mean, sorry, what are the rules?
You can F-bomb here.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
That's totally fine.
Kids are not listening to this industry talk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, all right, great. I had been beating down their door. They'd given me a job on a voice job on Barefoot Bandits. I did Gentleburn.
No kidding. Who were you on those shows, if you remember?
So Barefoot Bandits, I was this creepy little lizard assistant lady to someone.
Okay.
Oh, wait a second. So it was Rex's assistant.
Yes,
so you had it. I was only thinking about that the other day. It's like, children do not get a vote.
Yes. I still say that.
I animated that scene.
Did
yes,
you?
I did. Aww. I really liked it.
Serendipity.
Yeah, because I sort of ad-libbed a little Barack Obama poster as soon as she says,
children do not get a vote.
Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
I made her face turn into a poster of Barack Obama because it was political, you know?
So there was that Jandelburn. I can't quite remember. I'm sorry. And then the other one, I was a troll.
Okay.
On.
Would that also have been barefoot or?
Nah. Oh, I don't remember. Anyway, I've just done, so many things.
I can't possibly remember them all.
No, well, it's not true. But anyway, I've done a bunch of stuff for them, and I've always been trying to beat down their door and be like, I want to do. Yep. And the truth is, my hands have no talent.
Right.
No talent. So, you know, like, to be an animator is also, like, it's a, anyone will know it's a thankless job. But also it's a job that is for people who are okay with repetition. I am not okay with repetition.
Right, right.
So I could never really lean into that and become an animator via that track. So I've been working in production outside in live action world. And so the last 4 years I've been cast coordinating. So that's literally just managing the schedules of the cast and some of the schedules of, let's say, drivers who then drive those cars.
All right.
But my very first job of that was so intense. They didn't really realize how big the job would be, and I'd never done it before. I was also like unmedicated ADHD and all this sort of thing. So this is 2019, right before COVID.
Okay.
And I ended up having to coordinate 8 young women between the ages of 18 and 25, which have their own issues, but like largely there's sort of a getting them somewhere on time kind of issue.
Yeah.
And also just like, to be an actor is to steamroll your entire schedule for the production. You have to give up your life, what you eat, when you sleep, to be able to do that. And then there was, you know, like some of the challenging actors who were insisting that they live in Australia and catch red eyes over for their shoot days, and the shoot days would move, you know, like, so I had to manage over 100 people from all over the world for the duration of kind of a big series. We were shooting out at Bethel's, so the weather would change the schedule on a daily, weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And so I was just in the fire with that job.
Lost my mind. Baptism by fire, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like ever since then, it's like I've been able to weather so much. I was working during the weather bombs that happened this year. Mm-hmm. So we were working at Basement Theatre, and that flooded. We had to stand down production. Then the next one happened, flood, had to stand down production. So anyway, I've just weathered so many things, and I'd love to like tell you about how good I am at all that stuff. But you know what? It doesn't matter when it comes to animation.
Right.
It doesn't matter because we're indoors.
That's
and it's
right.
lovely. And like what I love about animation is that, you know, I'm going to say this, that there's no locations and no actors. And what I mean by that is that there's no bearing on the production's success based on those two things.
That's very true. As we've pointed out on this pod, To Make Your Space was about to begin animation production when the lockdowns happened.
Right.
And we, you know, I'm not saying there was no challenges, but we kind of just chugged along.
Yeah.
Because everyone...
we barely hit a speed bump, really. Yeah. We were kind of...
It's like
we're
a huge
yep.
shift in your mind of how to now operate. But luckily we're so online that you guys could.
Yeah. We were kind of lucky at that point. We like as a crew, we kind of gelled over Quimbo's Quest.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came into starting a new show, we kind of knew where we fit. We kind of knew what we had to do. And we just got done. And we also felt lucky that, you know, a lot of people were, you know, weren't able to work.
Yeah.
We felt really lucky that we could.
Yeah.
So we really kind of,
yeah.
you know, we embraced all of that and it was great.
No, love it.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, welcome to animation.
Oh,
where
you glad you finally
arrived.
Glad you finally got in.
If you
want
to drive people around, you can still drive me around because I don't drive
it. I didn't do the driving.
Oh, you didn't?
Thank you,
all right.
Simon. But I did tell people where to drive the people to.
If you want to tell someone where to drive me, I'm okay with that too.
Okay, cool. Because you bicycle.
I'm a bicycle guy, yeah.
Right? Simon, useless. You need to drive yourself to the
water. Yeah, I know. I've heard all about this.
So yeah, I came from that background. Cast coordinating is sort of where I cut my teeth in some really challenging jobs. Then last year I was production coordinated my first job. And look, every single job is different. And when it's your first time, you never necessarily do everything, you know, but like, I loved that job. I worked really hard in it. And we made something I'm quite proud of. So that was Rurangi, the second season of it.
You know
Not
what?
The first season, but the second season.
I was an extra in the first season of Rurangi.
Ah, true.
My friend said they got a jump scare because they're just, you know, at home watching a movie and then like, boom. There's Josh in the background.
Just took him out of the story,
he's followed
right?
me.
Right. So you would have been in some of the Auckland stuff.
Yes.
Right. Amazing.
Just one scene, an extra, just had to stand there. That's right. In my wheelhouse as an actor.
Thank you. I appreciate that because, you know, like I don't know, when it's... Animation doesn't really have to experience this so much, but like having background actors makes and breaks a scene, because if it's weird, it's noticeable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love when you see background actors just stealing the scene.
You know? I love, is it in Iron Man that there's the guy who is pushing a broom and the broom is not touching the ground for some reason?
Oh, that's
awesome.
I love that. It's delightful. Or I was watching Back to the Future 3. One of my friends had never seen it. They had seen the other two, but they hadn't seen 3, which is an insane way to live your life to me. It's like, what do you mean you've seen two of the trilogy?
Yeah.
But I had to point out one of the children, one of Doc Brown's children at the end, while he's giving his big speech that sums up the whole trilogy about, you know, nobody knows what their future is, so make the best of it. One of his children behind him is like making this weird, almost Robert De Niro face and sort of flexing his fingers like, come here. And once you notice it, you can't unnotice it. And you're like, Robert Zemeckis, but how did you guys not notice?
But then he points down at his crotch.
The kid is doing a bunch of like weird stuff.
Yeah, it's like he says, come here to like the camera, and then points at his crotch. It's there on scene, right?
Next time you watch it, keep an eye
out. I saw a really funny one, actually, last week. It was the film The Abyss. Mm. Right? James Cameron.
I just watched that again recently.
Right. It's the scene where the tidal wave is coming to the beach, and there's a whole bunch of people on the beach, and one guy standing at the bottom in the foreground. Someone comes up and pulls their pants down. It's like, it's in the movie.
Oh my God, we've got that at home. I'll have to.
Yeah, which is what you would do. Yeah. You know, when a tidal wave is coming, you pants somebody, right?
That's brilliant. Yeah.
They're going to live forever as the person who pulled their pants down.
Yeah.
Anyway, the question was, what is my job?
Yeah.
So, what my job is for this production is. Muck Party haven't really had someone in my position before, so I get to kind of build it from the ground up. But my understanding is there's heckers, like schedules, being across a lot of trackers, you know, so like spreadsheet queen, getting people into meetings and everyone knowing when their schedule to be in a meeting. Because my understanding is a lot of meetings have been in passing, you know, a lot of it's just like people.
You happen to see someone.
In their pants. Mm. You happen to see someone.
The meeting happens when we do it, and that's it.
That's right. And what ends up happening is a lot of what we're going to call Caucasian whispers.
Okay.
You know, as in, you know, like there's too many interpretations. There's too much, you know, like by degree, you know, degrees of separation from information getting to the source. And so people aren't all hearing the same thing. You know, like I want the mucks to speak and I want us to all hear it. Whether we take a different interpretation from that, no, doesn't matter. It's the fact that we all heard the words from the horse's mouth.
Okay.
And that way we can support one another when we kind of go, didn't Alex say this? You know, and you go, well, actually what I think he means is this, more context.
Sure.
Like, I can't think of a specific example, but I know that's happened somewhere in the years that I've worked here. I have been under the assumption that this was one way. Turns out it wasn't at all. I had misheard that through someone, not from the source.
So I get to streamline as much of that communication as I possibly can. You know, like I try really hard to make sure that everyone has what they need to do their job really, really well. But I also get the goss from on high. Nice. And that's the stuff I love. You know, like I love hearing about what the producers are going through, all of that stuff. I have my own, you know, like personal ambitions. Mm-hmm. And so learning about that stuff's really important to me. How to negotiate, how to become more diplomatic, all of that sort of thing is important to me. So I get to learn all of that stuff, but I get to work with crew. And, you know, like to me, they're, I don't know, it's sort of, I was thinking about this. What position would you be if you were on a pirate ship? I would like to be the first mate because I have I don't have the ear of the crew, but nonetheless, I am in support of what the crew want. If the if the captain goes mad or whatever, you know, we could mutiny and I'll support that. However, when it comes to supporting the captain, I can do that as well.
Sure.
So I get to kind of, anyway, I got told I was going to be the linchpin and I was a bit like, ha-ha, and to this day, I'm like, ha-ha. So
you hear this, Mucks? Yeah. There's going to be a mutiny if you don't watch yourself.
Just watch your step.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to, like, manage it so there doesn't have to be a mutiny.
Right,
because
exactly.
Everyone is, like, across everything. Everyone is empowered. Everyone's excited to do their jobs because we're all here to make cartoons.
A mutiny's such a hassle. Yeah, you'd rather avoid it if you can.
So
if
honestly, I'd rather just animate.
If I make it sound like it's too much of a hassle because everything's actually kind of sweet, I think that's partially, you know.
You're doing a good job.
Yeah.
First mate is doing their job.
So, yeah, anyway, fruit boxes every other week.
I did see a nice fruit box there.
Just save away the scurvy.
That's important, right?
Very, very important because, you know, we're animators It's just, we know we're going to snack.
Oh, and I live on chocolate, yeah. You know? Yeah. And then everyone's like, today I had a kiwi fruit. Never happens. Mm-hmm. Never happens.
Oh, it's just kiwi fruits? What's that?
Have you met? Oh,
yeah. I'm sitting right here, Simon. Well done. You've got to get something fresh into your body at some point in your life, I hear. Doctors recommend it.
Yeah,
well, it's just like, you know, when you're hunting for something sweet and you're like, oh, well, you know, there's a kiwi fruit here. Whatever, you know? Right. Like, if that gets people back to, like, working in a happy
way. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, you know.
I mean, like, yes, I'd rather eat a Turkish Delight, but I'm going to get way more, better energy from an apple and work
if and you can have your better. Turkish Delight as well.
And I'll have my Turkish Delight, exactly.
If there's fruit available, people are more likely to eat fruit, you know? Whereas who's going to go up to the corner shop and buy fruit?
And there's nothing better than someone else's food than your own. You know, like if I've got fruit at home, I'm not that excited about it. But if it's free fruit from someone else, yeah. I'm into it.
I wanted to ask a little bit about what do you do outside of work? I mean, I imagine that work is your full-time job at the moment. Yeah. Do you do anything creative when you're not here?
Yeah, so like many people here, it's like almost moot that, you know, like ADHD kind of breeds, you know, like a obsession and crazes for things. Mm. So for a while I was doing ceramics because I'm also a hipster.
Cool.
And I tried that rug tufting thing and made a few things. But again, a lot of that is very repetitive. Like ceramics is very like clean up after yourself and none of that's very me. But what I want to do is make cartoons, right? So I need to get all of the skills together to be able to do that. So I've been writing.
So okay. Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So like make your own cartoons basically. Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm not a reader, so I never consider myself to be a writer,
right.
So it's actually a big learning curve to be able to like try to hone a craft that's really foreign to me.
It is an interesting thing. Like you don't have to do a lot of reading to be a writer necessarily.
And turns out,
as many people are discovering, you don't actually have to be an animator or even really a visual artist to work in animation necessarily.
Yeah. It's sort of like more about respecting the boundaries.
Sure,
you know,
nothing drives animators more crazy than when we read an interview with some EP or a voice actor who just goes, animation's amazing because you can just think of anything and the animators just do it. And you're like, no. If you know, you come up with a scene with, you know, 1,000 people doing the Macarena. Yeah, someone's got to do that.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So with respect to the boundaries of the medium, which is what I find really exciting, is limitations and that sort of thing. That's what I want to do. I did get a grant recently, end of last year, for some writing that I did. And it's actually to make the first draft of a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, like feature length writing is like not really my jam.
Wow.
But the idea is great. But unfortunately, because I've told so many people about it, or it's been sort of advertised that I won this grant, I've talked about it so much and gotten so much positive feedback, I'm almost like, I've finished the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a real trap. I've actually told friends, like, don't let me show you art and stuff before it's done.
Yes.
Because if I do, you give me the positive feedback that's and I go, and that's all I wanted,
done.
Baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Where's the motivation after that?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, I'm just trying to gear up to be excited about that again. And I think that's just through research and that sort of business. But so writing and writing animated scripts. I did a couple of spec scripts for Beavis and Butthead latest season.
That's right. You were wearing a crew shirt the other day.
Yes. Well, not a crew shirt.
Sorry, not a crew shirt. Pardon me.
Yeah.
I misspoke.
A shirt. One day crew shirt.
A shirt club shirt.
Yes, a shirt club shirt.
Because Titmouse does this thing where every time a new season comes out, they have like, you can sign up to get a new shirt every week, and the shirt's always something from one of the shows.
Oh, right.
I've got a bunch of Venture Brothers ones. The new Beavis and Butthead, by the way, they started with a movie, Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. Now they're doing a new TV show. It's still just so good. They're just evergreen comic characters. You just take them, put them somewhere, they're going to do their thing.
And it's still Mike Judge, is it?
It's still Mike Judge.
Still Mike Judge.
Yeah. Yeah. He can still do those voices.
Right, yeah.
He's ageless. I would.
Yeah.
I would.
Really would.
He's a pretty handsome man, all things considered.
Right, I gotta check this guy out.
I'm telling you.
Were you a King of the Hill person?
Yeah, I am a King of the Hill person.
Yes, me too.
I love King of the Hill.
As a kid, I was like, no, this show is so dull. I don't understand it. There's no style to the art.
It was Simpsons and then that, and it was so baffling.
Yes, and like, Because the thing that I understand now as an adult is it's so character-based. Like, mm-hmm. once you understand that Peggy is this person who grew up with low self-esteem and has helped herself become a functioning adult by just constantly hyping herself up to insane degrees. Mm. I was watching the episode last night where Bobby has his first crush, and like...
Is it Connor?
It's not. It's a girl. It's a guest voice first by voiced by Sarah Michelle Gellar. And Peggy starts to get jealous because Bobby is saying, you know, we love each other more than you and Dad. I've never seen you kiss Dad. And her line is, "Your father and I have done things you can't even imagine." She's so funny.
I love it.
Yeah, great show.
It is coming back, by the way. I'm going to get off the King of the Hill train now. We're here to talk to you, but it's coming back.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I didn't realize that you were such an animation fan. What are your big shows? What are the things that like really?
So Batman Animated, right, is in my top five.
Of course,
you know, anything Genndy Tartakovsky
for sure.
Is in top five. You know, it's hard to say these days, but Ren and Stimpy was a huge formative experience.
Listen, absolutely, and I've talked about it a little bit. I actually went on someone else's podcast to talk about. Mm-hmm. It was a podcast called. Oh, I'm gonna forget now. I'll splice it in later. The podcast is called Reserved Recommendations with Hugh Dingwall. Chatting about things that you love but are difficult to recommend to people because there's baggage there.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So there's so the first 2.5 seasons of that. And then Rocco's Modern Life is probably like my zany side. Yep. Mm-hmm. It sort of appeals to that. So those are sort of, you know, roughly top five.
Did you see the new movie that they came back and did for Rocco?
Yes, I did.
How good. Like, what a king move to like come back after so many years and go, one of the characters is trans, that's the plot.
Well, it's funny because John Murray, he used to do a masterclass online. Masterclass. I wanted to sign up. I didn't have any money. And I kind of started chatting with him on Facebook. He doesn't do it anymore. I tried to look. And he kind of like bowed out of our conversation. I think it was to make Static Kling. And it's super interesting because he voices that character.
That's
the
right.
Big head's, you know, child.
Yes.
He voices it, and it's all about why the hell do you want to bring this back?
Yep.
Move on with your lives.
Yeah, that too. Oh. Like I saw lots of people going, this was such a great TV movie. I wish that they would do more. But like the whole point of the movie is you've got to move on.
Yeah.
You've got to let things rest at some point. But still, to come back and do what a great send off for those characters.
Oh, so clever. I quite like, I guess we're in that sort of like metamodern era of liking things to kind of understand us culturally.
Yes, Barbie was very that. Like, we know how the culture feels about Barbie and we're interrogating that.
Mm-hmm.
I worry it'll wear thin because they're like, you know what?
We'll move on.
You know what people want? They want things based on toys, talking about their brand. It's like, that's going to get old.
Have you
quick.
Heard Mattel have already announced
their MCU, the Mattel? Yeah. Cinematic universe. Yeah. I know.
It's like
I
they
know.
Didn't miss the message.
They totally did.
Yeah.
What people want is a film with a vision that speaks to people.
Yeah.
I mean, that the people love Barbie.
I mean, Barbie was such a breath of fresh air in terms of, you know, like it seems that for the last 10 years, every time I've gone to a movie, it's been, you know, half an hour of punching in the face at the end.
Yeah, CG punching.
And biggest explosion
and
wins.
And also, I've said, like, the MCU particularly, but a lot of films, even films that are meant to be, like, fun and colorful for kids, everything's, the colors are always washed out. Like, the MCU, when I think of the MCU, it has the color of concrete. Like, that's what those films look like.
I find it's all, like, oversaturated.
Okay, all right.
But, like, the thing is, it's sort of that, who's the guy who did, directed... The Superman movies.
It's the Zack Snyder one.
Wait,
that
so was
stuff
it Zack Snyder? That,
the recent ones,
Okay, who's Bryan Singer?
Okay, so Bryan Singer did the Superman movie that was before that.
So
with
that's the one that kicks off a lot of this. Like, to me, that's concrete. Right.
No. Bryan Singer did the Brandon Routh Superman.
Are you thinking about Man of Steel with Henry Cavill?
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
Zack Snyder.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah.
Definitely in the trend of what I'm thinking
of.
To me,
there's concrete.
Yeah.
But then... the other ones, there's I don't know, like oversaturated stuff is a little bit much for me. Okay, so if my first thought is when they went for Halo CE, when they went and redid Halo, so that it went from this like brutalist you know, like concrete, maybe 3D printed concrete world.
Yeah, which makes sense for that world,
which
right?
makes sense to, like, putting all of this kind of, I don't know, it just looked like there was code, matrix code running behind all of this metal and stuff. And I was like, no, this isn't this fucking, you know, Swedish, you know, scary place I thought it was. And so that's how I feel, is that they've kind of overdone it on, and it's not stylized in a classy way.
Sure, yeah. Yes. Whereas Barbie knew exactly what it needed to be, which is a super bright poppy world where everything's, if it's not pink, it's aquamarine. And just walking and, like, also kind of a return to, like, you know, sort of soundstage fantasy where everything's just deliberately artificial. Like walking around that super fake pink beach where the waves are plaster, I was like, it's throwing me back to things like, you know, Wizard of Oz or Little Shop, all done on one big fake set. They're never actually outside.
That's really hard to do, I think, in a modern way.
And very expensive. It's kind of brave, actually, because there was one scene where I think it was like Ken was coming down on a slide from his Casa del...
Mojo
house. And I just looked in and I thought, God, this could have gone wrong. You know, this could have looked like Joel Schumacher's Batman or something, where you get like Mr. Freeze wearing bunny rabbit.
Like when I say I like camp and I like fake sets, that there, you still have to account for taste. You know, can you make that? Is there a reason for that? Are you finding a way to make it work on the screen?
Yeah.
Joel Schumacher. I think the guy gets a little bit crucified sometimes, but I agree those movies don't work. Whereas Barbie, I'm surprised. A bunch of, like, young men my age, we packed the cinema because we wanted to go see Barbie.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, I mean, I think you got, like, the talent that was in Barbie, Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling and America Ferrera, I thought was wonderful in it.
Yeah.
You know.
Top to bottom.
You get that real good talent in there and just well-written. Turned out really well.
We have gone far afield on our Barbie discussion.
Look, but I'm not going to comment on it because I have a lot of thoughts.
Yes, right. Yeah, probably not enough time.
But this is the other thing about it is it's a movie about Barbie that says way more than a movie about Barbie ever should have said, right?
I mean, it could have just been a movie literally just, here's Barbie, she goes on an adventure. Instead, it's this super complicated, smart movie with like so much to say and so many different angles.
Look, I guarantee there was like 20 CGI Barbie movies before this one that no one talked about.
There are.
Yeah.
Right. They're all 3D.
Everyone was asking, where's Bibble? Where is Barbie's CG friend Bibble in the film?
You know what they didn't talk about is that Ken is actually Barbie's brother.
Is that correct?
That's right.
Ruth had a son and a daughter. So the daughter was Barbie and Ken was the brother.
Okay. Yep. Was that ever official in like the advertising, the marketing of Ken?
No, never. However.
But that came up in the real toys that made us, wasn't it?
I watched them. I was probably like 12 or something and Ruth went on to like Oprah. It was something like that. And so I watched her talk about it.
Gotcha.
And it was like, Ruth, you dirty bird. Yeah. You know, like, don't you know what we've been doing? Yeah. But wouldn't that be great in the sequel if it turns out that Barbie's like, no, Ken, we're brother and sister.
Like
some Star Warsian moment.
Yep.
It'd be so great.
It's going to happen. It made too much money. Yeah. They aren't not going to do a sequel. So hopefully they've got some other ideas.
Magic 8-Ball the movie.
I know.
Can't wait.
Well, listen, what I'm getting from this conversation is that we'll easily be able to fill a regular episode talking to you again.
I've got so much to say.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Perfect. Yeah. That's who we need on this show.
Yeah.
Are we wrapping up?
I think we're wrapping up.
Yes. Okay, cool.
Do you have anything that you want to promote? It doesn't have to be something that you made necessarily.
Well, I guess one of the other things is what's inspiring me at the moment. And I just want to say that I went to a masterclass. So the film festival's happening at the moment. And I went to a masterclass of Rolf de Heer. Mm-hmm. All right. This is not a filmmaker I can necessarily recommend to anyone unless you're the kind of person who likes films that one should not recommend to anyone.
Okay.
So he did Bad Boy Bubby. And the masterclass was such a breath of fresh air in terms of, you know, like the scale at which you want to work in terms of budget. determines how much freedom you have in your filmmaking, the freedom of crew you have, and the freedom of how long you need your production to take. It was so refreshing. I had made so many notes, and there was only like 10 people at that talk.
Whoa.
And I love that because I prefer the intimacy of it. I could ask the questions I wanted to ask as we went along, but he deserved so much better because he's such a amazing filmmaker making stuff against the odds. It's that weird, like, I call it bogansploitation of Australian stuff, weird Aussie films,
low budget, weird characters,
so weird. But you know, like, as in, there's something you know, like, scary about the outback, about like, you know,
the danger there,
the danger of the outback.
It's so big and everything wants to kill you.
Yeah, but the people,
and the people, like, who choose to live there.
Yeah, you know, it's and so anyway, is incredible
that,
filmmaker.
Do you happen to know, is that masterclass still running?
I don't know, actually. I just sort of, like, it popped up on my emails and I was like, I'll sign up to that. I don't know if I'll ever meet this guy. And another person I emailed, like Mark Putty, like 15 years ago, being like, do you have any job? You know, and, and he said, he was like, not at the moment, thanks. That was about it.
It's another important lesson. It never hurts to ask.
Yeah.
You know?
So is that your style?
Email these people, prepare for, you know, like, it's not that I don't have a fear of rejection. It's not that I don't have that. But the truth is, they won't remember. They just won't remember you. So why not shoot your shot?
Sure.
You know? Absolutely. You know, one last little story. I recently did a couple of courses through UCLA. One of them was called the Showrunner Bootcamp, and highly recommend. I will go and do the advanced one as soon as I possibly can. But in that, she was like, you've got three options for your final class. You can pitch a project, which is what I did, and I nailed it.
Awesome.
You can give us a full presentation on how a show got made, figure out who all the financiers were, when they came on to the show. So we learned heaps through that. But the other one was find a showrunner, get in contact with them, and interview them for an hour and present that back. And I was like, you know, I'm going to pitch my project, but why don't I see if I can get a hold of the creator and showrunner of Severance?
Okay.
Right.
And I got really close. Unfortunately, the strike was about to kick off, or it had already kicked off, I guess. Not just that, but there's quite a lot of, like, what sounds like infighting between, like, him, Ben Stiller, and the other showrunner. And, you know, like, you can take that with a grain of salt, really. You don't really know. You could be a little creative battle going, no, I want this, or whatever. However, I contacted the assistant to of the agency that he belongs to, and I said, hey mate, I'm doing this thing, you know, like, I had an excuse to contact these people. You can't just necessarily go, hey, I want to talk to you.
But
you know, I'm like, I'm doing this course, this is the purpose, this is who I am, can I send you an email about it, and will you forward it on? And he kind of, like, fended me off a little bit, and I was like, hey mate, if we just, like, let's not let this die here, would you just forward it on for me? I don't expect anything from you. And so I went and wrote my email. It was, you know, I acknowledged the strike and that this might not be the right time for this. I, you know, like, did a little bit of, you know, like, I love Severance. This is so fantastic. also, his journey, because it comes out of left field, feels like a little bit, I don't know, that's how the kinds of things get made that maybe a New Zealander could, you know, do. And at the very end, I was like, you know, I don't expect anything, but if this could just land on his desk, all I want for him to be is flattered.
Right.
And there was that little touch of pressure to send it that way so that person could feel good.
Yeah.
Right.
And I got an email back being like, he's super busy, but he's definitely flattered.
Ah.
You know?
That's enough.
Oh, nice. I felt so good about that. So look, do reach out to these people. Like, obviously, be careful what you wish for in terms of your heroes.
And of course, the most important thing is acknowledge that they don't owe you anything.
They don't owe you anything. But, you know, all I wanted them to know was that someone put in the effort to tell them that I thought they were cool.
Yeah.
And I don't need anything more than that. I'm not,
Severance is the show on Apple Plus about the people who forget who they are when they are not at work.
That's right.
If only we could.
I think Sikowski was recommending that. Yes, he was.
Have you not?
I haven't. I got Apple Plus for a month because we needed to finish Ted Lasso, and also I wanted to check out Schmigadoon, and it ran out before I could check out the other stuff. But Severance is high on the list of Apple shows I would love to see.
It's a romp, man. I just went. Yeah.
It's an awesome concept. Yeah, it's very really Twilight Zone-y, and I'm excited to see how they.
And beautifully executed. Yep. It's exquisite. It's really great filmmaking.
Awesome. That's great, a recommendation. Big
recommendation. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Cool.
Well, Daisy, I think that's our time for now. Thank but you we'll so much definitely be having you back.
Yay. Thanks for coming in, Daisy.
Thanks, guys. Love you.
Bye. Bye.